It's the TV Dudes, recorded on September 23rd, 2014. Popping the TV bubble. Getting tired of these True Detective casting rumors, guys.
Yep.
They're going too far.
Yep.
Next, they're going to be telling us some shitty Scotsman and some... Wait, is he Scottish?
He could be.
I don't even know what he is.
I don't know.
I was going to say some terrible comedian.
Everyone named Colin is Scottish, right?
Yeah, I think so. They're Irish. Or is there a difference?
It's ish.
Oh, boy.
Well, can we go ahead and say that?
Not after the vote this week, no. Yeah.
There's no difference.
They had a choice to be different, and they chose to be the same.
That's right.
Too bad.
One of them wears a skirt. The other one's drunk.
So welcome to our third.
So welcome to our xenophobic podcast.
Yeah, there we go.
It's reverse racism if we talk bad about our own ancestors.
Yes.
Well, this is the third episode of our newly adjusted TV Dudes podcast.
Awesome.
And format. Yeah. We have some reviews that are coming in on our iTunes site that you guys put in, which is great. Thank you very much for that. We've been getting some questions. Just a little quick reminder, you guys can email us questions at mail@thetvdudes.com. But let's go ahead and jump into some questions before we go to our news segment. Because I also put a little shout out on the Facebook page and on our Twitter, and people sent some in.
Yay.
So
all right.
We're going to run through some of these. So first off, on Twitter, Chris King Music with an M-U-Z-I-K says, "Hi, guys. How much do you think the show Homeland will suffer after killing off Brody?"
I don't think it'll suffer at all. I think it'll actually get better.
Because
the Brody thing went a season too long.
The problem is...
I think it went two seasons
The thing is,
they should have killed Brody at the end of season one. That, in hindsight, that's very clear.
That would have been the best thing for the show. I can understand why they kept him through season two. Because up through season two, when they had the best scene of that whole series with the interrogation.
Yeah.
That was great. Kill them at the end of season two or have them be in Canada and just have them be gone.
Right.
I could have lived with that. But then that season three was just...
I
just say disregard season two like it never even happened because it was so stupid.
Yes.
But his death at the end of season three was phenomenal.
Yeah.
That was an emotional gut wrencher and it really brought Carrie into a place of... Wow, you know, this show doesn't have to be about her falling in love with some loser. You know, instead,
he's a war hero, Johnny.
He's a war hero. He's such a war hero that he got elected.
And a loser.
And a loser. And a scientific genius who knows how to short circuit a pacemaker by using his iPod or something. I don't know exactly how that works.
That's my thing is that I feel like...
I think that Dick Cheney would be a dead man if that was possible. I'm making a call to action, listeners, but...
I think that basically the biggest...
Know the NSA listens to our podcast.
Biggest problem is that they didn't kill him at the end of season one because it sort of showed that they were being a little toothless. Like, okay,
and it would have
they're going to pull him out. It would have had way more impact, a lot bigger surprise.
Profound impact.
Yes.
I mean, because would they have been able to prove what he did?
No. Nobody would have known.
I mean, unless that video got found out.
Well, the thing is the writers went the wrong way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the chemistry between the actors was great, but they should have said, screw that, just kill him off anyway. It would have been better for the story. But because the chemistry between Carrie and him were really, really good, I think they said, oh, let's see how far we can take this, because they were great together.
I agree.
And that's why I said that season two, the interrogation scene was unbelievably great, because even all the history that they had between each other all came up in that scene.
Yeah.
But then I would have killed him right after that.
Sometimes great chemistry shouldn't deter you from a bold narrative.
Almost always, actually.
Yeah.
Usually, if they're getting along, if something
Michael
is
Emerson
working,
and Lost.
No.
Much as that was
good, there's no saying the show wouldn't have been just as good or better if they had done the ballsy thing and killed the character as popular. Always kill the popular character. Just because he's popular doesn't mean you should keep doing it.
Shut your mouth, Joss Whedon. Shut your filthy mouth.
I don't even know who I'm listening to.
All right, guys. Here's our next question. It comes from Dr. Detfink, also on Twitter.
He says,
favorite TV couple not on Modern Family?
Well, that's
all. Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with the Green Arrow and Black Canary.
Really?
just love her, Katie.
Oh,
Lotz?
I love her too.
I just love Katie Lotz. I just
favorite
love her.
Though, right? Like favorite right now.
That's, yeah, they just spring to mind.
Mr. and Mrs. Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. That's by far like of all time.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if you're being contemporary.
Yeah,
I say that's the most convincing married couple, and they never even had a sex scene.
Them and
they
like
never
the Cosby's.
Did anything fake. You know, maybe. I just love that show.
Nobody's,
their chemistry.
Nobody's going to say Jamie and Cersei Lannister? Oof. They're so playful together.
You made it awkward.
Homer and Marge. They've made it for longer than anybody else on TV.
That's true.
I mean, okay, if we go lately, I would say, the couple and You're the Worst. I love those guys.
Current? The couple and You're the Worst?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a great couple. Yeah.
I just looked up and I totally messed up. That's Jimmy and Gretchen.
Yeah.
I love
that anyone remembers their name.
Aya Cash and Chris Gere. So
yeah, I like them.
The English guy and the hot chick.
Okay.
I also, by the way, I will rarely give Family Guy a nod because I'm not a huge fan these days. But one thing I remember from the early days of Family Guy, that Homer and Marge were always at each other's sort of at odds. You know, he's dumb, she's smarter. That there's a little bit of back and forth in the relationship. There's a moment in Family Guy where Peter's out digging a ditch and something in front yard, and he says diarrhea or something, and he thinks it's funny. And Lois comes out carrying a tray of lemonade, and he says, "Hey, Lois, diarrhea." And she starts laughing and says, "Peter, I have lemonade here." And I thought that was such a moment of like, okay, that's why these two are together.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. It was a great scene. Yeah.
It's like these two are on the same wavelength, which is so unlike so many couples where the woman's the smart one who puts up with his shit,
and
the guy's the doofus. And I'm like, okay, so she's got to touch the doofus in her, and not just at night when they're doing it.
I wish they did that more often. I wish they humanized those characters more often.
All right, let's move to another question. Jordan Worth Cobb says, what are some of your favorite recurring characters on any TV show?
Recurring characters? Well, since we're talking about The Simpsons, I have to mention both Troy McClure and Lionel Hutz. I mean, you want to go talk about great recurring characters, Phil Hartman.
I mean, I guess you mean like
recurring guest stars, kind of.
Yeah, guest stars.
Guest stars or characters?
People that, yes.
Or both, okay.
I'm not saying like Adam Sandler when he pops up in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean like
Patrick Warburton on Seinfeld, Putty from Seinfeld. Yeah. Seinfeld has tons of great recurring characters.
Yeah, they really do.
They've sort of perfected that. I'm sure Curb Your Enthusiasm has some great recurring characters.
Yeah.
Well, Ted Danson.
Ted Danson was great. Let's see. Oh, J.B. Smoot. Well, he became a cast member. I'm trying. It was like between second and third. Funkhausen.
Oh, Funkhauser. Marty Funkhausen, yeah. Super Dave.
Yeah, Super Dave Osborne. He's always funny. I know he's getting his own show, but I always liked Better Call Saul.
Bob Odenkirk?
Yeah, Bob Odenkirk.
But he became a regular.
He became a regular, but early on he was recurring.
Chris Parnell is really the king of recurring.
Right.
Dr. Spaceman.
Yeah.
On 30 Rock. 30 Rock was really good for recurring characters.
Oh, you know what else is? Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec is really good with
recurring. I'm trying to think of any off the top of my head. I mean, John Ralphio is one that I love.
Yeah. Jenny Slate too.
Jenny Slate as Mona Lisa.
Recurring character.
Sark. I always loved him when he would show up on Alias.
Yeah, he was a great recurring character.
But okay, one more question, and then we'll jump into our news. Boyd C. Atkins IV says, "Is the influx of superhero / comic related TV shows oversaturating the medium or making it available to a broader audience?" Yes.
What do you mean? Do you mean making comic books available? Or are you saying that there's a spike? Because we have an expert in this room that might be able to tell us if there's been a tie-in.
If I were to guess what he's asking, he's saying, is there too much comics on TV? Are people going to get sick of it?
Yeah.
And I don't think we're there yet. Because honestly, CBS has just now acquired their first one. And so it's not like every network had one. Now every network has one. But I don't think we're at that saturation point yet. I don't think people are sick of it yet.
I feel like the geek community...
Yeah,
like kind of jumps the gun and gets sick of it before
because
the
we've been soaking
audience.
In it for years.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, stop! You know, leave that back to us because it's like that ownership kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I don't see any danger right now of comics.
General audiences.
Comics are going to be just like books are. Basically, it's just another place where they go to grab source material. I mean, that's kind of what TV does a lot of.
But TV from the beginning has always had somewhat of a comic thread. I mean, if you go back to the old Supermans, go back to even the cartoon.
Yeah, but those weren't prime time.
Yeah, well, I guess.
George Reeves' Superman wasn't primetime. That was
even the Spider-Man from the 70s, the Lou Ferrigno, the Hulk, which is primetime. Even stuff not directly tied to books, like even...
Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah, or The Great American Hero. There seems to be every generation they're trying to do some. I mean, some more successful.
Yeah.
Others, like The Cape, maybe but not.
It's always like, oh, wow, the Hulk works. Let's have a Spider-Man show. Yeah. Oh, no, let's just cancel them both.
have they ever done a live-action Iron Man?
No, not. I don't think they could do it on budget. They didn't think they could do a movie until they did the movie. So.
Yeah, he wasn't an A-list guy.
Yeah,
unless he's going to wear like a spandex iron suit.
Well, I just remember those the 60s cartoons. The Iron Man ones used to creep me out because they were just, I don't know, something about the Mandarin in it just used to scare the hell out of me.
They're all kind of creepy.
Well, yeah. I do think that the question is interesting, and I think that it ties into our theme for our general subject, which is going to be at the tail end of this episode. But we're talking about this idea of the bubble popping in TV. If we're kind of reaching an oversaturation point. And we'll readdress that in a little bit. But let's go ahead and move into our iTunes shoutouts. What these people did is they went to our iTunes page. Go to iTunes, go to The TV Dudes. And if you click on that, you'll see a little tab that says ratings and reviews. You can go there, give us 5 stars, and write a little review. And we'll read it on here, and it helps us get more exposure so that other people start listening. And then we kind of dominate the world. Solid Snake 58 said, "The TV Dudes is a great water cooler discussion about all the best TV of the season. Grant, Randy, Greg, and Johnny Neal are 4 guys with unique perspectives, but a singular passion for the boob tube. Their discourse is sometimes contentious, sometimes congruent, but every episode is always entertaining and often enlightening. Quick note, the TV Dudes is based in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world, and the music interludes between segments on the podcast always feature some catchy tunes." Cool. Thank you, Solid Snake.
Oh, did you guys... Oh, I'm sorry. I have to reveal that was me.
That was you?
It was so good. It's so complimentary. I don't even know what to say. Thank you very much.
You said that? You did that?
No. I have no idea who that is.
Oh, okay. I was like, really? Is that your name?
But it's just... what it wasn't me because it's like... The only person he knew the last name was Johnny.
I think it's probably that there are more Johnnies in the world, so you had to specify Johnny Neal.
I like to think that people don't think Neal is his last name.
Yeah.
It's like Mary Ann or something like that. That's your middle name.
That's even
it's
better.
It's funny, though. I never noticed how often people say, yeah, well, you're Johnny Neal. You know, like I introduce myself that way, you know, and I never realized.
You're Johnny Neal. You're not just Johnny.
That I said my last name.
So you're not Johnny Unitas?
Yeah.
You're not... Johnny Carson?
Johnny Be Good?
Not Johnny Be Good?
Johnny Neal.
All right.
Damn it.
AJJ Evans says, his title is really entertaining. He said, "We are in the renaissance of TV, and there are so many good TV shows out now. So it's awesome to have these guys watch most of the TV pilots and tell me if it's actually worth checking out. Not to mention they are hilarious. I would appreciate more Tracy Morgan impressions by Johnny."
we all would.
So would I. Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to accommodate that.
Nailed it. That's perfect.
Yeah. I have to work on that a little bit.
Okay, so Shane Gray says, "Love TV talk. These cats talk with the best of them. You should subscribe. I know I did."
Awesome.
And it looks like he might be from Hanging Out Cast, another podcast. So check
well, I'm going to subscribe to that because it sounds like a crazy beatnik situation.
Mm-hmm.
Hip cats.
And Zare2 says, "Everyone should give these guys a listen."
Ah, thanks.
So thank you guys for all those. And once again, please everyone go check that out. Give us a little 5-star rating. Really helps out the show. And now, let's move on to the news.
No.
Please, Randy, I'm sorry.
All right, yes, we'll move on to the news.
Randy, being all obstinate.
So, I referred to this earlier, basically, that CBS was the last holdout with network not to have a superhero show, and they're catching up to the rest of us. They're going to do Supergirl.
Ooh.
Which,
what I meant was, ooh?
I don't know. I have skeptical of CBS doing anything at this point, but... Greg Berlanti, who's one of the executive producers on Arrow and Flash, is in there. The new normal's Ali Adler will write. and executive produce. And
okay.
I don't know that the new normal I didn't see, but I remember hearing some pretty harsh reviews on it.
The new normal.
And it was a sitcom. Anyway, we'll see where that goes. But
do you remember what that was about? Because it rings a bell, but I didn't see it.
It was one of the many sitcoms that failed. That's all I remember.
So this is CBS.
Yeah.
And that's weird because we already have the DC universe being established over at the CW.
That's not super weird because Gotham's over at Fox and...
yeah, but it doesn't seem like they're trying to tie that into the same universe. And they're doing a prequel
Constantine's
thing.
At NBC. It's not super weird to put... Supergirl is sort of different.
Constantine has always been on the fringes. He's more like a Vertigo character.
That's true, except they have brought him into the DC universe now.
That, like, occasionally, right?
Yeah. No, he's a member of Justice League Dark.
Like, really?
Yeah. He doesn't smoke anymore. They brought him into the mainstream DC universe.
I hate when they... I don't want to segue into a comic book dudes thing, but like I hate when they try to bring Captain Marvel into the DC universe.
Yes.
I hate when they do that.
Yep.
It's just like, oh, let's fudge this.
Yeah,
you know?
It's
like, how many rules do you want to break to do that?
It's a weird thing. I don't like it either, but they have made
I don't think anybody likes that.
No. I don't think so either.
I don't think it ever works either.
Nobody wanted it.
I don't like it. And I don't know what you're talking about.
But the thing with Supergirl, and I can see where you would have brought her in The Flash, but she already has had her sort of CW version. She was on Laura Vandervoort.
She was great on Smallville.
So I think maybe they just want to do a different standalone.
Come on, somebody.
She was really. Yeah.
She made Roy Orbison do that.
I didn't watch Smallville.
Your loss.
But I think having her separate from The Flash, I mean, Green Arrow would be a weird fit for Supergirl. I can understand that. Flash, it seems like they're going a little more superhero, but I think they may be wanting to keep the Superman universe, like the Batman universe, kind of separate. So it sort of makes sense that they would parcel that off to another universe.
Well, that's my big question.
Yep.
Is there any sense that Gotham and Supergirl are going to be leading in somehow or another to this big Superman Batman movie that's coming up in a couple of years?
They have said they plan to keep the TV and movie stuff separate. And I think that's probably smart because if you're making your foundation in TV where the budgets are smaller, you probably don't want to start small and get bigger. Although that sounds
What that tells me?
Yeah.
That they don't expect these shows to still be on by the time this movie comes out.
Do you think so? Because I don't think
I just really do.
I don't think they'd have any reason to think like Arrow's going away or Flash is going away.
Yeah, but Arrow and Flash don't have to tie in immediately.
No, it's true.
I just feel like Superman and Gotham are pretty, or Supergirl and Gotham are pretty specific to Superman, Batman.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas, you know, and you could tie in Aquaman and Wonder Woman without getting into Flash and Green Arrow.
Yeah.
I think. I'm just saying.
I don't know. We'll see. I think, you know, Gotham's ratings came in pretty strong. We'll talk about that a little later.
Wouldn't that be easier if they were on the same network?
Yeah,
What's the movie studio making the Batman guy?
Warner Brothers, who owns DC.
Who owns DC? Yeah. But their tie-in to TV is they don't own any of the channels, right?
Warner Brothers has a stake in CW. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then that would actually make more.
That's partly why all this stuff's been on the CW. Okay. But you know, they could possibly do some kind of crossover with. I mean, Buffy and Angel crossover when they were on UPN and WB, it's not unheard of. Bionic Man and Bionic Woman crossover, and they were on different networks. It's not unheard of.
They were?
Yeah. That's what I was told by some TV grad students this weekend. By the way, I hung out with TV grad students this weekend. That was interesting. anyway, I think that it's unlikely, not because of the different networks, though. It's because the tone is so different in these shows. Mm-hmm. Like, Constantine and Arrow are going to be very different shows, and I can't see a crossover, even if it wasn't a Vertigo-esque character. So, I don't know. It's interesting, and I think it's interesting that CBS is trying it because it's kind of outside their wheelhouse. They did that Michael Chiklis show, but they haven't really done a lot of this sort of fantastical superhero stuff. Our next story is on Justified. Sam Elliott and Garrett Dillahunt are going to be in Justified the final season. Sam Elliott will play, and then it's kind of amazing they haven't been in it before. These books guys seem like they should have been in Justified.
I feel like they have the same DNA as...
They live it.
They live it, right.
They don't need to be in it. They
just happen to walk on camera.
Well, Garrett, he was... he was in Deadwood with he played two different characters.
Yeah, that's
he
what
played
I mean.
Two different characters in Deadwood, and Sam Elliott wasn't in Deadwood, who should have been in Deadwood.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. It feels like, wait, they were already in the show, right? But no, they haven't been. Sam Elliott is going to play Markham, a former Kentucky gangster who returns from exile in Colorado with a fortune earned growing legal marijuana in the state. So he's going to be a foil for Mary Steenburgen's Catherine Hale, who I like a lot.
Yeah. Cool.
He's a bad guy, which is interesting. I don't see Sam Elliott playing a bad guy a lot of the time.
No, I would have thought you would have said he was, you know, the new boss. Yeah, or something.
That's what I was assuming too. Dillahunt's character Walker brings special ops and combat zone experience, along with buried demons and simmering rage, to his work as the head of security for a semi-legal businessman.
Classic Dillahunt.
So now that almost sounds like it could be a sort of 2 or 3 episode stint, like a smaller one.
It sounds kind of like a play off the character that Tim went against.
Yeah, Tim's the Desert Storm
buddy.
Mirror, yeah.
In the season before last.
I agree. It could be something like that. Maybe he's going to be another one of Boyd's guys, but it says semi-legal businessman, not Boyd, which would be a weird thing to do. Yeah, but I guess maybe they don't want to spoil it. It's possible. But either way, both guys who should be Unjustified, and that's
especially
great.
Especially if it's the last season. Perfect for the last season.
And a real quick aside, have you guys been watching FX? Did you see that new great commercial they've done for all their shows? It's it's like an HBO style commercial. It's awesome. And you realize, wow, these guys have a lot of great shows.
Oh, wait, did it have the comedians as a little bumper in it?
Yeah.
I did see that.
Yeah, the comedians had Archer, had FX, had Justified the Americans.
It did feel like HBO.
It's like, ooh, they're good.
But guess what? It's not HBO.
It's
TV.
It's TV.
Speaking of HBO, though.
Yes.
True Detective. Now, as you guys know,
we got our big news.
I have not believed in this for a long time. I was waiting for the actual. I'm still not 100% on this.
Mm-hmm.
Until these guys show up at my door and tell me personally, I don't believe it.
Knock.
HBO has officially confirmed that Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn are going to be in True Detective Season 2.
That's awesome.
They also released the first official log line for the new season. Three police officers and a career criminal must navigate a web of conspiracy in the aftermath of a murder.
So Vince Vaughn is the career criminal.
Yep.
And Colin Farrell is going to be one of the cops, but I guess they have two other
cops. They haven't announced the other cops. Now, it does mention in this piece that other names rumored to be in the mix include Friday Night Lights star Taylor Kitsch, The Notebook's Rachel McAdams, and Mad Men's Elizabeth Moss. Also in the mix, everyone else you've ever heard of.
Oh, yeah. I saw the bigger list of all the females that they speculated and tried out, and it was so ridiculously long. It's like, come on.
I think it's awesome that Colin Farrell's in there, because, I mean, he was so good in Elf and Step Brothers. I think that it's nice to see him stretch his legs.
No, I think you're right. I think we're going to see a really different kind of Colin Farrell than the guy we saw in
Stranger Than Fiction.
Anchorman.
Yeah. He really knows how to sell a
premise. I agree. I think it's a strange take for him, but hey, if Lorne Michaels wants to do True Detective,
when there's a will, there's a way.
Oh, boy. Actually, when you mentioned Friday Night Lights, I thought it was going to be Kyle Chandler, who I actually would love to see him with.
With
Colin Farrell.
Here's the thing I didn't know about True Detective, and I guess the Emmys sort of brought this in stark relief, which I didn't see the Emmys, obviously.
Fuck the Emmys. that was Randy's line.
Kerry Fukunaga?
Yeah.
The guy who directed...
what the hell was that, Randy?
The guy whose last name.
The guy who directed the entirety of the first season.
We hire Tourette's people here.
He's on the outs.
Dudes.
He's on the outs with the writer, Nick.
Oh, really?
And as a result, he is not directing season 2.
I didn't know he was on the outs of that.
They're apparently not in good terms.
Wow.
But, so season 2, Justin Lin is confirmed to direct the first two episodes. That's the guy from the Fast and the Furious franchise. I'm not sure how good a match that is.
I don't know. I think that guy has got a bunch of talent.
He is. He's talented.
He's
it's such
great.
A weird. It's not the.
It's not as artsy.
Yeah, it's not his style. You know.
Yeah. I don't know. He made what 6 movies about people using cars to rob banks.
Yeah,
that takes an awful lot of imagination to pull that off.
Yeah, it's true.
Continue making as much money as he does from each one.
Yeah.
So let me go ahead and take a look at what else he's directed here.
He lives his life in sequel in time.
True Detective. He's going to be doing that.
Oh, that's good. Okay, that guy. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny because we were just talking about that.
That's weird.
He directed some Community, including the Modern Warfare episode.
Okay. Uh-oh. See, this is what I mean. He's an action guy, and that's not what I think of.
He is an action guy,
but I mean. I have a certain faith in HBO at this point. You know, if they want to get somebody to they want to bring in a director who seems a little weird, they must know what they're doing.
And he's only doing the first two episodes, maybe they're going to be kind of a two-parter kind of conjoined.
Yeah, they may be doing
element like has a lot of action at the beginning to kind of kick it off.
Well, Three Detectives and a Crime Lord is more characters than True Detective season one had. True Detective was two characters, and everybody else was tertiary.
It's a whole lot better than Three Men and a Little Lady.
Although, if that was True Detective season two, the now grown up baby
Steve Guttenberg's back.
Guttenberg, Ted Danson, and. Tom Selleck.
That's right.
That should be True Detective season three.
I think it's a superheroes
Could
rule,
you let
though.
Tom Selleck yeah. around your baby.
Where if in the first season you only have one villain, you up it.
That's
you
right.
Have two villains.
That's exactly right.
We need more True Detectives.
The Yellow King and the Red King.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of hard to say how many King. Villains there were in True Detective. I mean, by the end of it, some people died off camera. You know, like
Johnny. We are all the villains.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to go all Rusta deep on you there.
I guess you were.
You need more of a Texan drawl.
You're right. Yeah. You need a drawl and some Lone Star.
Yeah.
From where I'm sitting.
But speaking of villains, also up is Lucifer.
Lucifer.
Yep. From Vertigo, DC Comics Vertigo, mm-hmm. a spinoff of the Sandman series that was very popular. It has been officially is it going to series?
Now Lucifer also crosses paths with Constantine, right?
Yes, he does.
Imagine that.
Actually, I think it's a different version, weirdly. The devils in Constantine are different, a different Lucifer. This is Lucifer as protagonist. Fox is working on this. I don't know how deep it is on development, but it's Lucifer as protagonist. It is Lucifer who has given up in the Sandman series. Spoiler for 25-year-old Sandman series. Lucifer gives up Reign of Hell.
Yeah.
And gives it to Morpheus and goes to live on Earth and opens a piano bar.
Oh.
And this is about sort of all
You know, I've been in a piano bar.
That felt like...
I felt like this was some kind of satanic punishment.
It makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so then, and in the Lucifer series, they bring in Asgardian myths and Japanese myths.
Is it going to be set in a piano bar?
I hope so.
Because I think that would be an awesome show.
Oh, yeah. I can absolutely... This series of graphic novels is really, really good, and I would love if they can capture even a bit of it for TV. I think
Satan's
it works.
Piano Bar would be great.
Satan's Piano Bar would be
Imagine
great.
Imagine all the guest stars showing up. Because I've always wanted to do a show that was like Cheers, but set in a karaoke bar. So you'd have like weird guest stars that just pop in. Like Elvis Costello plays a guy at the counter. And
well, you might have that, but Sam that. Malone is going to be... Satan.
So yes. you're envisioning sort of a Love Boat
kind of
thing?
I'm actually kind of feeling a little bit like somebody who's strumming my pain with their fingers on this one, been reading my mind. what were we talking about?
Lucifer. Finally, the biggest news story of this week. Bigger than True Detective. Bigger
I
than
love
Lucifer.
That we're ending on this one.
Bigger than the Justified casting. Just the biggest news story you can imagine. Problem Child may be coming to TV.
What?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, man, are we all excited for this?
Now, for those of you who don't know, and that's all of you, Problem Child was a movie.
The show killed John Ritter?
Yes.
the movie's got to be, at least 25 years old?
It was an 80s
movie.
Early
90s.
Early 90s?
Okay. Wasn't that what Robert De Niro was laughing at in Cape Fear? Wasn't it Problem Child?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was.
1990, so yeah, 24 years old.
Wow.
So is there a... A premise for that? Well, what's the premise?
We're not really sure.
Asshole kid.
This seems to be sort of a speculative thing. I don't know that it's being developed by old school and Hangover writer Scott Armstrong
to come to
another Colin Farrell vehicle
to come to NBC.
NBC as a single camera sitcom.
Basically, it's about a couple who can't conceive, decide to adopt, and they adopt a
terror,
a little terror.
Wow, I don't know.
All right. Pro-adoption show.
Yeah.
But there's a visceral problem I have with that now, working with some troubled children.
Yep.
Like, let's just make fun of a fucked up child.
Yeah.
That's adopted and how terrible it is to adopt fucked up children.
Humor comes from pain.
What if this time it's not a 8-year-old boy or something? What if it's Paris Hilton that they adopt?
Oh, my God.
Because
that's
worse.
A troubled child.
Actually, no. Well, you
she's kind of 40 years
she
old.
She is a problem child.
They would,
but still a problem child.
They just adopt Will Ferrell.
But she's like, rich.
Oh, no, he's going to be a true detective.
Oh, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Never mind.
That wraps our news for the week.
All right, guys. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back with some TV talk. Lucifer, son of the morning. I'm going to chase you out of earth. Lucifer, Lucifer, son of the morning. I'm from the murder capital where we murder for capital. Lucifer, son of the morning. I'm going to chase you out of earth. You did it again. You're a genius. Lucifer, Lucifer, son of the morning. So you niggas change your attitude for they asking what happened to you. Lord forgive him, he got them dark forces in him. But he also got a righteous cause for sending them a murder me. So I gotta murder them first, emergency. Doctors performing procedures, Jesus. I ain't trying to be facetious, but vengeance is mine, said the Lord. You said it better than all. Leave niggas on death's door, breathing on respirators for killing my best four haters. On permanent high haters as I skate in the Maybach Benz.
James Spader.
James Spader.
Raymond Red Reddington.
Man,
is
Reddington.
Back.
His voice is so silky.
He's great.
It's funny because...
Maybe not silky.
No, well, he's got that same persona. He always has had that same persona since, like, what was that movie he did when he was the...
Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
No, but even before
Pretty
that...
Pink.
Pretty in Pink?
Pretty in
White
Pink.
White Palace.
Well, he's, and Pretty in Pink when he's kind of that's the suave kind of... Kind of
he was smug.
Guy.
He was very smug. He's gone from smug to snark.
But he's still smug.
Because he's lost his hair.
But he's still smug and it still works for him.
He's smug, but he doesn't seem douchey.
No, exactly.
And I thought he seemed douchey when he was younger.
Yeah.
But now he's more dignified with his smugness.
Right. Yeah,
so you're just like, God damn it, I respect you.
Well, it's like, I think that's what
you
that's,
handsome, bald-headed son of a
Burt Macklin,
well,
you son
I
of a
think
bitch.
If you start younger, as kind of a smug asshole, because you don't have any experience to be that smug.
But then you become Robert Downey Jr. or James Spader.
Yeah. And then you're like,
you own it eventually.
Oh, you've been like this your whole life, but maybe you knew something back then that I didn't know. Now I think
it just wasn't as.
Have you ever read any interviews with him or anything?
James Spader?
Yeah.
He's a big jazz guy.
Yeah, he's his father is a Harvard educated minister.
Yeah,
he worked his way through college as an aerobic or as a yoga aerobics instructor. I mean, James Spader did.
Yeah, he's now an interesting cat.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy, and he has three daughters that are grown, and he stresses to them to please tell all their friends that he's not the guy that he plays on movies and TVs, that he's really a nice guy.
It seems like he made that turn in about 2003 when the practice in Boston Legal happened. That's sort of when he went from
Boston Legal.
Smarmy young guy to smarmy older
because
dude.
He was next to a smarmier guy.
Shatner.
You're right. Shatner.
But he's always a weird guy. He's always a little bit weird. He's always a little smarter than everybody else, which I think he probably really is a little bit smarter than everybody else. But Sex, Lies, and Videotape, which was, you know, that was... I avoided that movie forever. And as
really?
Much as I'd heard how good it was, I avoided it because I was like, I hate that guy.
That movie.
And then it blew me away.
It's like him and Eric Stoltz always went in that fuck these guys from the 80s category for me. I don't know why. I just thought,
how can you
douchebags.
Not like
and then when I and then when, yeah, I always liked it.
He wasn't good enough for Back to the Future, was he?
No, that was.
He was in Mask. He's great in Mask. Mask was pretty good.
He was in the Mask.
It's a Mardi Gras.
Yeah, he was in the Mask.
Was he Jim Carrey with the green?
With Richard Jenny. Yeah, he was
terrible. Anyway, getting back to the Blacklist, James Spader is back. The best part of it.
I think that's a perfect point. We just spent like 5 minutes talking about James Spader because he is the show.
Oh, absolutely.
Are there other people on this show?
And now, okay, now here's something that I noticed last night that I actually wrote down.
Right.
I never noticed how much of the show he does just by himself.
Yeah.
He's just in the back of a car. Yep. He's on the phone. He has very little interaction with the rest of the
cast.
More and more.
Now and then he'll meet with Megan Boone,
Elizabeth Keen.
Elizabeth Keen. He'll meet with her on a park bench somewhere, but most of the time he's just on the phone or he's talking to whoever he's about to kill somehow.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and it's like... Wow, he's so good at it that you don't even notice that he carries the show.
Well, that's why
by himself.
That's why when they brought in Alan Alda as a bad guy, it was like you finally had somebody he could match wits with.
Yeah,
like,
and the thing is when I was watching it yesterday too because I was watching it with Lean, And I was kind of, or I was watching this just right before the show, right before we were taping today, and I was like, this show is really ridiculous. Because, like, the opening scene of him just trying to blackmail a bunch of African, freedom fighters, warlords.
Child warriors.
Yeah.
Pull on the brim of that hat.
Yeah, I mean,
child soldiers.
You and your child soldiers are like, wait, this is kind of fucked up. But he's like, yeah, and I just ordered these missiles. They're going to rain terror on you. I'm like, first of all, they would just kill this guy. And you've seen ISIS. They just chop your head off. There's no playing with these guys now. But because it's James Spader, it just works. He's got the big cigar and burns the money. It's just great. And I've always liked that about the show. When they did the ads up to the show, they always featured him doing something ridiculous. Like all the best scenes last year when he like shoots people like, yeah, I'm going to shoot you. Because I got to go get some wine. And he just shoots people. Like, there's a lot of these silly shows where, you know, you think about all the action and all the setups and they move too quick. Like CBS shows, like the NCIS shows are like this, where they're like, this show's ridiculous, but they don't have anybody really cool enough to carry the show.
There's no charm. And he's got a lot of charm and he's got enough charisma and chemistry by himself to carry the whole show.
He pretty much is carrying a silly mystery bad guy of the week show.
Well,
this one is Lord Baltimore,
which I love.
I thought it was like I thought they kept saying Lord Voldemort.
I knew you thought that.
I didn't really know
for sure who Voldemort is, I knew you would. I have said to our cohort Randy over there, who's being quiet because he doesn't watch the show.
I have watched the show.
That the Blacklist is what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is supposed to be. It is the comic
it's
book.
It's just supposed to have Spader in it.
It is the comic book Secret Service super spy ring movie show that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is supposed to be, but completely lacks the charm and color.
I don't entirely disagree. You know, the thing that reminds me of that I really like? It reminds me of what I liked about Alias.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
It reminds me of what I like about Dexter.
Really?
One actor who carries the entire show. Really?
Okay, that's
everything
true.
Else about that show, when Spader's not on or he's directly tied to what's going on in the plot, is boring.
Well, you know, it's funny that you would say that, because last night I was going, now where did we leave off? You know, the plot meant nothing to me.
Yeah, because I knew.
And they were, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, Peter Stormare cut his hand off. I don't care.
And that's why I stopped watching it. Because much as I like James Spader, I don't really want to watch him for an hour every week. I've seen enough. I got my fill of what Blacklist does, and I haven't seen any indication they're doing anything different with
it. Well, you're in the minority, because this is one of the number one network shows on.
Right? I am always in the minority.
No, you're not.
Wait, hold on. Wait, I usually have that card.
Yeah, that's Craig.
Exactly.
I like the show, and I mean, it's really silly, but it's an easy watch. It's not super heavy. It's got enough violence that I'm like, ooh, you know, like fingers and boxes and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, it keeps me entertained. And Spader says a few lines that are really good, or there's a couple scenes with him in it where he kind of lays down something kind of, I don't know if emotional is the right word, but just poignant.
Yeah.
I like the way he delivers it.
He's a man who is filled with regrets, and he plays his regrets just enough that you can tell that he's dying inside.
Yeah, he's like...
He's
like,
trying to make up for something, and he's dying inside.
He's like an American James Bond without the gadgets. Like, James Bond... Well...
Except if James Bond was a bad guy.
Well, yeah, like,
I mean,
okay,
because the thing is he's a traitor.
Right.
I mean, you know, he was the number one agent who then sold out and became a villain.
So what you're saying is if James Bond was American, a traitor, and not at all like James Bond, that he'd be just like James Bond.
Well, no, I mean, but the smug confidence that James Bond, I would say Sean Connery's James Bond always kind of had.
No, I can totally see that. Yeah.
They both like wearing clothes, so in that way, I think they're kind of
similar. Speaking of clothes.
That was a clever. Go, Johnny. Go with that. That was clever.
There was a whole spiel last night with this Assad agent. A woman Mossad agent, who they kept showing her tattoo, so you know that means something later, where she said, we profiled profiled the clothes you wear and the colors that you choose and that you wear Ermaldino Xenia neckties yes. of earth tones. So we put a tracking dye in their wool or in their silk in Italy for... So we can track everybody in the world
that is
who
bonkers.
Buys these ties.
I love it.
Yeah, right. Like
not ridiculous in the least.
It was
oh, I
so.
Love it. It,
but it
but
was
it
played
awesome.
With such a straight face.
Yes. Yeah,
and he was kind of like a little bit impressed.
Yeah,
that
oh,
that's how
fantastic.
They tracked him down. It was like, oh well, because of my Xenia tie. Well, it's a good thing for you. I wore my Xenia tie today.
Yeah,
or something like it's a good yeah. thing for you. It's not spring. The spring.
And that's the thing.
It was just so great. And there, and he's tied to a chair going, yeah. you know, you might as well let me go because my handler's going to be here in a minute and I'm not who yeah. you're looking
See,
for.
See, and that's the thing. I didn't quit the blacklist because I didn't like it. It was because there's always stuff. It's always it's just because there's so much other TV yeah. on right now. That's the only reason I'm not watching Blacklist.
Well, overall, guys, what do you think of it coming back? Is it strong? Because I didn't actually finish the whole episode.
Oh, my God. They brought strong. Kristen Ritter in, totally
right. oh,
playing
wow.
against type.
Uh-huh.
And I loved having her in there. And Mary Louise Parker and Lee Turgeson. Mm-hmm. Lee Turgeson had a small part, but I'm sure he's going to be back.
Oh, yeah.
Man. Mary Louise Parker playing the part of his ex-wife mm-hmm. Of
Red. Red's ex-wife.
Yeah. She's having a dinner party where they're all talking about dildos or something. I don't know. They're
We're
all
talking about atheists. That's what they actually
It was one of those TV conversations, yeah. and she looks up and goes, oh, shit. And, like, suddenly all these U.S. Marshals come in and say, we have to relocate you. And her husband didn't even know that she was in the witness relocation program. So she's Red's ex-wife. And, yeah, it hit the ground running. It really did.
Man, I want to start watching it again.
Oh, wow.
They have a great supporting cast.
They had you at Mary Louise Parker.
Yeah, Mary Louise Parker.
And Lee Turgeson, quite honestly, he's great.
Yeah.
Is that the guy who plays Berlin? Who I
no,
like?
That's Peter Stormare.
Peter Stormare, okay, yeah.
Berlin.
I love him.
Yeah,
Peter Stormare's great in everything.
Yeah, he's great, and then he's got one. I mean, it's so cheesy. He's even got like, okay, we are.
He has a hook.
Yeah, but we're in like the field of where you know you got prosthetics, hands that look real, and he still has a hook. Like the
he's
ultimate,
old school.
Like the ultimate bad guy. Like,
I'd have a fucking hook.
He's gonna have an eye patch after next season.
I mean, just like, James Bond is one more James 60s James Bond. Can you get? It? He's like
he needs a pet cat.
Yeah, if he's got a pet cat, he's got the and he wears like you know turtlenecks and stuff. He's got the hook. He's like rubbing on her skin. Yes, yes. Yeah. And we're gonna do. I know what I'm going to do to you.
And
I mean,
then he pulls
ridiculous.
Out a Polaroid camera,
yeah.
and it's like There you go. You know that shit's going to happen if
I
he starts
it.
Taking Polaroids.
And then they send I'm going to send pieces to her, of her to you, like my daughter. And he's like, it's ridiculous, but it's great.
What does it say about Americans that either Jack Bauer or Red Reddington are our American James Bond?
I says it's pretty accurate. That's what I think. It's pretty
accurate. Probably, yeah.
Bush Doctrine, Grant. Bush Doctrine.
I'm going to eat a burger and punch you in the face. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, let's jump into the next show, Gotham.
Okay.
Gotham.
I only had one question I wanted to ask Johnny. So, can you tell that Batman's an asshole already?
Okay, let me just tell you what I gotta say.
Sorry.
First of all,
that's still my famous, favorite meme ever. Batman is an asshole.
Grant, you're gonna edit all this out, right?
Let me get started on my first. Before Randy gets off on his comic book guy version of what's wrong with Gotham, I just want to know, is Rupert Murdoch deeply in the pocket of the American Dairy Association? Because we had the milk thing and the strain that some of our more...
You're the only person who notices this.
Some of our more dedicated listeners are aware of the milk carton mystery of the strain opening episode.
Okay.
In the second to the last episode of You're the Worst, when...
Yeah, milk. Yeah.
Was there a milk?
It was
thing?
Called.
Yes, it was.
Drink your milk.
Yes.
And she had to down this fucking goblet of like 18 ounces of milk while her big Nazi father stood over her saying, "Drink your milk. Drink your milk." And she's, I mean, it was like a weird, creepy porn.
Yeah, Johnny, as you described that, I'm starting to think Murdoch may have a fetish for milk.
And so,
why?
Because
Catwoman stole milk?
Not only did she steal a half gallon, you know, plastic.
And she fed it to a cat.
To a cat.
No. You need to get HD, my friend. Maybe it's my new glasses. She steals this gallon of milk, this half gallon of milk, and then it cuts to her. She takes a little foil thing out of a trash can and takes this brand new thing. You just saw that it was brand new.
Yes.
And pours some milk into it.
Yes.
There's only like an inch of milk left in there. So somewhere between stealing that half gallon of milk
and making
it
full.
No, it was
not. It was completely full.
You watch it again.
You watched it again.
Are we
seriously
talking about how much milk was in the
carton? I would not bring this up if I had not completely verified.
I'm watching.
She had apparently drank a quart and a half of milk out of that jug.
Randy, what about this show?
There's something about milk on the Rupert Murdoch networks that I don't think I'm the only one who sees it.
I think you're the only one who sees it.
Well, not anymore.
You just explained it to us. We still don't see it.
All right. Well,
there are patterns out there. There are patterns.
Oh, man.
Well, first of all, I want to say that the thing with the milk is the best part of Gotham.
Ooh.
God.
Well, in that, the young Catwoman was the one who had it. And
no,
she was
in that this show sucked. Okay, let me start over.
Oh.
So where I was going before, Johnny wanted what was probably 20 minutes on milk again. I don't know what the hell that is about. Johnny, seek help. So you guys know I'm a comic book guy.
Really?
I came into Gotham fully aware that this is going to be a weird thing. Like, instead of being his boss, Gordon is going to be the subordinate to Donald Logue's Bullock, their partners. There was, you know, young Batman. Batman's 12 years old when Gordon is already a cop. All that kind of stuff. I was okay with any of the changes because I knew this was going to be a completely different take.
Now, there is already a comic book based on the Gotham City Police Department. Am I wrong?
Modern day, Gotham Central. Had they done that, it would have been much better.
Okay. So they have... Gotham Police Department has been looked at as a superhero.
Absolutely. These characters, I mean, a lot of the characters in here are from the comics, but here's the thing. I came into this, I had no preconceptions about who was, you know, how they were all going to fit together. That was fine. There is no tradition of a young Batman. This was new territory. So the fact that they're doing some weird stuff like Catwoman is there to witness the murder, which I thought was kind of a weird choice, that Montoya is having a lesbian relationship with Gordon's fiance, which is also sort of a weird choice.
What?
There's all kinds of strange... There's all kinds of strange choices made in this. That Fish Mooney is the Gotham crime boss who has a guy who's going to be the Penguin working for her, and he's her umbrella holder. There's some weird choices made here. I'm okay with all the weird choices if the writing had been decent. Because the moment-to-moment dialogue and the plotting, I saw every twist, such as it was, coming 5 minutes before it ever happened.
All right. Well, what was the worst?
Okay.
Give us an example of the worst scene.
The worst scene? They were all bad scenes. But
one of the worst.
When they're both being hung upside down and they're bantering.
Oh,
that was bad. I mean, it was bad. And the thing is, any of these scenes could have worked.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the one that Johnny and I talked a little bit off mic. At the end, spoiler, Gordon comes to Bruce Wayne, 12-year-old Bruce Wayne, and brings him his badge and is like, I'm sorry, I told you we caught the guy who killed your parents, but he was set up, but I'm going to catch him. And the kid's like,
I told you that if I didn't catch him, I would quit or something.
Yeah,
I promised I would catch him.
And so he gives his badge to the kid, like, I'm going to quit. And the kid's like, no, you go back. And I'm like, the kid's not your boss.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, and the thing is, that scene could have been done well. Had Ben McKenzie and David Mazouz, I think is his name, the kid, had the two of them played it better, had it been written better, this could have been a really good scene that sort of bonded this cop and this young kid who'd gone through a tragedy. Instead, it was just lay there. It was boring. I didn't buy it for a second, and it just looked stupid.
That sounds really bad.
And he did kind of bond with him at the scene of the crime.
Yes.
Because he tells him that his parents got killed in a car wreck or something like that. And he said, so I know exactly how you feel right now. Which was kind of... Okay, I got a one-word... summary of the show.
Sure.
Gutless.
Yes.
It's a completely gutless show. Everything about it. Okay. So you got Jada Pinkett Smith playing the crime lord, whose name is Fish Mooney. Fish Mooney.
She's in this?
Now, let me tell you what would have made the show twisted. What I want out of Gotham City, and I'm not a comic book guy, what I want out of Gotham City is for it to be insane.
Yes.
And it would have been so great if Fish Mooney would have been played by a drag queen.
Yes!
Because Jada Pinkett Smith played the part like a dude that was in drag.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
She looked like a drag
queen. No, you're absolutely right.
And she played it like a drag queen. So wouldn't it have put a weird twist on the whole thing?
Yeah.
If I mean, what's the Joker except for a drag queen in a suit?
What's the
right?
Joker except for an obvious cameo that they kept hitting?
Yeah, that, the,
oh really?
That was yeah. He's a stand-up comedian in her club, and she's like, I like you, kid. And I mean, she almost could have had a line like, you're a real Joker. I mean, it was so obvious.
Oh,
and
right.
This thing is packed with this. Like, Edward,
oh, it's an Easter egg hunt.
Edward Nigma is the.
It's
cop.
An Easter egg hunt for like. Kids in wheelchair, you know, like everything is within
yes.
reach. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing
really,
out of reach, oh, nothing man. Hidden. Everything's day glow. Day glow Easter egg hunt in
yeah,
a
I
coal
mean,
yard.
They have Edward Nigma, aka the Riddler, is the police analyst, and they're like, "Stop with your riddles, just tell me." I mean, it's really on the nose, and also that's not a bad idea. Like having the Riddler, be a police analyst who goes bad—that's a good origin
yeah.
for him. But well, I already don't give a shit because it's so bad and so cheesy.
Well, and if it would have been cool if they just wouldn't point it out.
Yes.
Every time that they
yes.
were, like there's a little girl with red hair that's
mm-hmm.
got all these plants.
Yep.
She said, Daddy's mean. You
yeah.
don't want to meet Daddy. He's mean.
Yep.
Shut up, Ivy.
Yes.
So
you know,
they...
It's
you're okay. such a poison to your dad.
Let me read off... all the people in this first episode that are from the Batman universe,
yeah.
in addition to the cops, leaving aside that there are four cops from Gotham Central, leaving aside Alfred, leaving aside Bruce,
mm-hmm.
you've got Penguin, a nod to the Joker, Carmine Falcone, who's the big crime boss
mm-hmm.
from year one, Catwoman, and Poison Ivy are all in this first episode. Not just in the series, in the first episode.
That's too much.
It's front-loaded.
Yeah.
And...
You're not even scratching the... Every
oh.
cop in Gotham City was introduced.
Yep.
Alfred was introduced.
Yep.
Alfred is like a Guy Ritchie character. He's not at all...
Yeah, he's
like
a Cockney thug.
Well, now, ain't that good of you, cop lover?
Oh, like, he said mate like he was Australian.
Yeah, it's
and the actor's Australian.
It's,
so it's like,
weird.
He is?
Yeah.
He's John, he's,
no, he's
no,
British.
His
British.
Father was
yeah.
Doctor Who. For
Man, he's, he said that so Australian.
They also... They do some weird stuff like... The thing is, they aren't trying to reach the comic fans here. They've given up because the continuity is all screwed here. Like mm-hmm. Captain Essen, Sarah Essen, is actually supposed to be in the comics, is a younger detective who comes in and has an affair with Jim Gordon. And so I don't know if they're going to follow that, but it's like they did the thing that Arrow sometimes does where they take the names and just kind of assign them to characters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did you bother? why bother having these characters? But even, like I say, any of that stuff I could have rolled with if the story had been better. There's also a weird tonal disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how Batman Returns had that weird Tim Burton-y weirdness, but also trying to do darkness? This
yeah.
is all... Did you notice how neon-lit everything was?
Yeah.
Like, Gotham should be dark and Chicago-y, and instead it's like Chicago, but with a weird neon glow.
I liked that there was a lot of daylight. I liked that.
I like the idea.
I get kind of tired of everything being
yeah.
in the rain and in the dark.
No, like, I agree, but there was so much neon.
Well.
And I mean, I didn't like
neon
that.
They were on the neon side of town. They were in the seedy bar area.
I did not like that. I also liked
the design of the show.
I thought the guitar music was awful. Like,
I don't even
really
remember
bad.
It.
I noticed it every time it popped up.
I only register Greg's guitar music.
I thought Jada Pinkett was terrible in this. I thought Fish Mooney was a boring character. The only person I thought was maybe interesting is the guys playing the Penguin.
Who looked more like Jughead than
yeah,
the Penguin.
It's a different take on the Penguin, but him being sort of this young sociopath, I liked the idea of that. I just thought they didn't give him anything to do with it.
Well, and it was kind of like, why are they saying he looks like a penguin?
Yeah.
Because he didn't look like a penguin. He was tall and skinny.
No, but did you notice at some point he's like actually walking with his feet
yeah,
apart
but,
like
but
a
that I mean, was because he got all beat up.
But, I mean, it's ridiculous how hard they're trying to hit the,
yeah.
look, he's a penguin.
Yeah.
Like...
I don't like being called a penguin.
They're doing a Marty McFly don't call me chicken thing with him, and his don't call me the penguin.
I don't want
to. That's what triggers him to kill. I mean, there are people.
I can't wait to finish this.
Here's
pilot.
The weird thing. I've seen the reviews are trending well. It got good ratings, and I've seen a lot of people saying they really liked it. And I want to know how. How did you really like this? This was awful. Not like bad, but. Awful.
Okay, it wasn't bad,
it was
bad, awful.
Awful
the way Randy is saying.
It was awful.
But it could have been a whole lot better. But my feeling was, additionally to it being very gutless,
yep.
I don't see a series there. I mean, talk about you know, premature segue.
Yeah. Well,
it was,
I mean,
like, let's just get all of our cards on the table. Okay, now what do we do?
But,
we
you know,
anything left to play
obviously
with.
The through line for the series is going to be the murder of the Waynes. There's the way that was shot, the way it was done. The guy kills both of them. After they've given him the money, they give him no trouble at all.
Right.
He kills both of them, and then he lets the kid live. The way that was done, there is no doubt in my mind that it's because he was not ordered to kill the kid.
Oh.
There is no doubt in my mind that they were murdered, that it's going to be a conspiracy, that it's not a random street crime.
Well, it wasn't interesting enough for me to want to even about that. My problem, my other problem, and it's part of the gutlessness, is that it's a Batman show. It's already a Batman show, even though there's no Batman yet. It's already...
You mean just because of all the criminals or because of the supervillains in it? Or
because it's already the origin of Batman.
He hates Batman.
I mean, no, it's not even my anti-Batman thing.
Oh, okay.
It's just that it's supposed to be pre-Batman Gotham.
Yes.
And it starts with the murder of the Waynes, and then every time you see Bruce Wayne, which is way too often, he's standing on the edge of the... of the building.
I agree with
that. It's like, oh, we're already getting into, it's a slow motion origin story.
Well, see, and I agree with that. I think that the murder of the Waynes is a good catalyst because it sort of indicates the downfall of Gotham. The Waynes were supposed to be a philanthropic family, and to have them gunned down by random street crime is sort of a thematic indicator of how bad Gotham's gotten.
Do they indicate that in the pilot?
No, not in any way. But that's what it should have been.
No, but when Bullock gets there, he tries to pass it off to Major Crimes.
Because he didn't want any part of this
big case.
He
doesn't want
any
part of it because he's like, oh, that's the Waynes. I don't want to deal with this because this is bigger. This is out of my league.
And that's why I think having the murder so early and having it be the Waynes are killed, they could have played that as Gotham is descending into hell, and this was the indicator of how bad things have gotten, that this wealthy family that has nothing but helped the city, they've been murdered.
Right.
But then they decide, let's focus on what the kid's growing up like, and that's who cares? Who cares what the kid's growing up like? Well, he's 12.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'll say this. Despite how much I hated it.
Uh-oh. Here it is.
I'm going to watch a couple more episodes and see if they can go somewhere. No. This is not I give up on Smallville really quickly.
Despite the milk thing, I loved Cameron Bickendova as Selina Kyle. She didn't have any lines.
She didn't do anything.
She was just there.
Yeah.
And I just think she's adorable.
She's got a good look. I just want to see if they're going to do anything with her. I'm curious to see if they can pull out of what looks to me like a giant tailspin.
I'm hoping that this ends up being her story, that she's the witness, that she's the Sally Draper of this story.
Maybe. Mm. I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith it's going to get better. I'm going to give it a couple more episodes to see. But if you love this, and I'm sure there are those of you who will already comment and tell me why. And don't just tell me I'm an idiot, because I know you think I'm an idiot. That's fair.
I don't think you're an idiot.
But I viscerally hated this show, and I was really excited about it.
Okay, fine.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to talking about Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow that does everything right.
Yeah, I want to talk about the opposite reaction.
Man, Sleepy Hollow hit the ground running.
Yes. Go ahead.
Talk about the best fake out first act of a show that I can remember. Because we just saw my DVR was set to record the reruns, and they had the reruns up to, you know, the season finale.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, because the whole reason why I hadn't caught up on Sleepy Hollow is because I missed the first two fucking episodes.
Fox was
terrible with going to, like, you go to Fox, the app, with putting up all their back episodes.
No, they played them all in order within the last, like, 6 weeks. They would play.
Motherfucker.
They were filling every blank spot.
I'm really angry because I really wanted to watch it. So I've got the new episode sitting on my DVR. I'm like, God damn, I've got
time to get the.
We just saw those just a couple of days ago, right? Okay, and we were completely up to date. We had the whole John Noble reverse, and John Noble is just God's gift to television as far as I'm concerned. So we're watching the beginning of Sleepy Hollow, and we're just, my wife and I are just going, wait, what?
Yeah.
I guess we missed one.
Yeah, me too.
And down in the corner, it's got the little Twitter that says Sleepy Hollow premiere with a little hashtag. Yep. I'm going, I don't know. This isn't adding up, honey.
Yeah. Yeah.
It still says premiere.
Yep.
I'm all hitting the info button. No, season premiere. And I'm completely snowed by their fake out. They did a total fake out.
I have a different take on that.
Do you?
I was bugged by it. because I knew, because they showed him in the box and then they showed them like a year later, and I'm like, okay, maybe they're actually going to do this big time jump. That's interesting. But I had that same irritated, like,
they
wait,
showed
did I miss
that
an
plant,
episode?
Though. They showed that plant root.
Yeah.
And the roots went off. So they hinted.
You feel like they played fair?
They did. I think they played fair.
I was annoyed for Barbara.
Because he was freaked out about being in the dark.
Yeah.
And not knowing what was going on. And then that plant root.
Yeah.
I thought they did it so well that I was completely snowed
by
it.
Well, when I was watching it in the opening, I was a little annoyed by it because I'm like, wait a minute. I know I didn't.
Because you had just watched that fucking Batman show.
Well, no. I watched Batman afterwards.
I'm surprised.
I watched Batman last.
I'm surprised shit's still hanging on your walls.
No. I wasn't like, oh, fuck this show. But I was like, I don't know if this was a good decision. I'm like, I'm kind of just kind of lost. I don't know what's going on. And I also, in the flash forward, they intimated they had killed off her sister, which annoyed me because she's one of my favorite characters.
Right.
And so I'm like, I don't know about this jump forward. I mean, yeah, it raises the stakes. And then when they did the reveal, I'm like, okay, that was actually pretty good.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It fucking kicked me in the nuts, man.
I mean, I knew that. I was pretty sure that's where they were going.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure that that was where they were going.
They had me. Because, yeah. I mean, honestly, if they would have gone another way, I would have been like, I guess I missed one.
I would have been unhappy if they'd stuck with that year forward jump, but when they revealed it was a flip, I was like, okay.
I loved the way they did it. And I was so glad that they did not kill Jenny Mills.
Yes, she's the Sarah Connor. She's the badass.
Oh my God. Yeah. She is so gorgeous and has the crazy scary eyes. Best crazy scary eyes since Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
I just absolutely love her.
She's great.
And that they seem to have expanded her part. I bet that they didn't intend on her being as big as
I would guess that too.
It's a stunning cast. The three of them working together is so great. I just love it.
They also, I thought they did some nice expansion of the Headless Horseman this year is played not by the guy who was playing him, but by who was Richard Citrone, but is played by Jeremy Owens, who was the guy who played the rival who became the Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
So they decided to give that guy more of a character than just being a headless badass.
Well,
and I like that, only she sees
only
it.
Katrina, when she's wearing the emerald, she can see his head, and he's going, "I'm going to win you back, girl."
I love John Noble now that he's done the full heel turn as the bad guy.
Oh yeah,
it's so much fun to watch him be evil, be
and
like,
it was,
pure evil.
And it was awesome how even in the Flash. The psychotic.
The fake out.
Yeah. Even then, he was being evil.
He was scary. He was in the cell, and it was still creepy as hell. Yeah.
And he was cracking the.
When he did the reveal, and he's like, we just need to know where the key was. It was great.
And then Timothy Busfield. As Ben Franklin.
Oh, my God.
And I love that.
I love that
Ichabod
hates
Ben
him
Franklin.
And thinks he's a preening, and he's so upset to find out what his legacy is. That it, like, they call the when Abby says, or not Abby, when Jenny says it's all about the Benjamins, he's like, yes, it always was. I mean, Timothy Busfield playing sort of the crazy off the wall Benjamin Franklin, he's in for at least two more episodes according to IMDb, and I'm really excited about that.
Right.
I also love, this is such what the Bonkers Show does, that the key from the kite is an indestructible magic key that he was trying to destroy with lightning. He wasn't trying to discover electricity.
That's just what's so amazing about that show is that they completely go ape shit with this stuff. And, you know, they tell it with a straight face, but they know that it's insane.
They know it's bonkers.
And they know it's funny.
Yeah.
And you completely buy in, and you get invested.
Well, you know how some of the R-rated shows on TV will have this, due to violence and sex, you may want to watch. This should have a thing, a crawl at the beginning that says, we know it's silly. We don't give a fuck. Get on board. And then it should start.
Well, you know, I think that's pretty much, they didn't have to say that.
It's in there.
It was pretty much like, oh, the Headless Horsemen are the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And all I know is that Bing Crosby cartoon, you know? I mean, that Ichabod Crane, this is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
I also thought John Cho showing back up surprised me because he's got his own show on NBC.
Yeah.
But I liked that he was there. I like his role in this.
Backup plan.
I'm really loving this show, and I thought that this was a really nice return to form for it.
Yeah.
It was a good step back.
Hit the ground running. Loved it.
Also, one thing, there's something about this I know I'm also the game guy here, like play a lot of D&D and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The various way they do the puzzles, like they have to figure out where the key is and what the codes are. It reminds me so much of playing a good game with a good GM. It's so much fun. It's like they give you the weird clues and you have to figure it out. And you're so happy when they figure out, oh, it's behind the brick. And he was giving him a code when he said that thing. And they just love playing around with the wordplay and the puzzles and that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun.
And I love that they have flashbacks, you know, back to his time. And that they'll show the flashback to three times.
Yeah.
Like, you know, okay, this is, you get it now? Do you get it this time?
But it's never overbearing.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
No. Love Sleepy Hollow. Very happy to have season two back this quickly.
Yeah, me too. And it looks great.
It looks great.
It really is a well done, well shot, well put together. Ken Olin from 30-something directed, and Timothy Busfield from 30-something was Ben Franklin.
Yeah, and Olin directed a couple episodes from last year. He's going to direct some other ones this year. It was really good.
All right, Johnny. So, you and I have caught Mindy Project, and we've got New Girl. Randy, did you catch that as well?
I have not been watching Mindy Project, but on word of mouth from two guys I know who do a podcast about TV.
Yeah.
Do we know those dudes?
You know them. You sleep with them.
Hey, wait a second.
Wow.
What's going on here?
Wow.
Hey, sailor.
I didn't know they knew we slept together, Johnny.
How do you think I got this gig?
I met yourselves, you creepy, pervy bastards.
Yep, we did too. We met that as well.
Yes, I decided to go ahead and watch Mindy Project this year back, having only seen the first two episodes of the first season.
All right, well, Fox has this new comedy duo. I guess it's not new. It's been 3 years running?
3 years running.
3 years,
yeah.
Three years that they've been paired together.
Yeah.
Because this is Mindy's third season. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. It's third season.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, were they full seasons?
No, they were abbreviated.
Okay, I didn't think so.
But New Girl, let's start off with them. What do you think?
I got to say, Jessica Biel, she's one sexy monkey face.
Oh, Jessica Biel was having so much fun here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of like, I don't really care about anybody on this show except for her.
She was great.
Let me just stay with her.
I thought it just made Zooey Deschanel look so bad.
I know.
Like, Jessica Biel walked circles around her. I think that Zooey Deschanel is very cute. And that's kind of it. She's a little bit one note on TV.
I think she's really good. And I think that this character is just, there's nothing left to do with this character.
I kind of agree with that,
so
actually.
I've been out since the Prince episode last year. And
that was a good place to stop.
that was a good answer.
That was a warning sign.
But, so I didn't even know Jessica Biel's on the show now?
No,
just a guest show.
Okay, the premise of the plot was that all five of the roommates, five, right?
Five?
Including Cece, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, good coach, there's six.
Six?
Wait,
them.
Wait, okay. I'm sorry, I got to back up. There's six roommates now?
Well, Cece's not a roommate, but so yeah.
Damon Wayans Jr.'s back.
Yeah, I knew he was back.
So there's six, this group of six friends
of six people,
have all been invited the 12th wedding of the season, which tells me that I've never met any of these people that they're going to the wedding of. It's like these people don't – it's one of those things where you go, nobody exists on this show outside of the circle. That's a show that could really use some recurring characters besides the homeless guy on the street.
No, what about her lesbian friends? Those characters when they show up are great.
Right? Why don't they show up at the wedding? I mean, you know, it's
like, they didn't
let's
have
get
the budget.
Some continuity. I don't feel like there's a continuity between these characters' lives.
Well, even before last year, like, okay, in season two when they were trying to do the thing for their jobs, like, I forgot that she's a teacher. You know, she was doing all that stuff. Or when Winston was actually interesting and funny when he was trying all those different jobs and he was doing a job as
he was funny this week because he was very sore from cop training. So we found out
become
that
a cop?
Yeah.
Because he tried
he's going
to.
Through the basic training.
Oh, but was he that funny?
He wasn't that funny.
No, it was a weak episode for Winston.
But at least he had some growth. Nobody else in the show had any growth.
Don't you feel like they finally calibrated Coach to the show? I feel like they finally locked him in as opposed to he felt out of place a lot of the time last year.
I didn't think they'd perfected it.
I thought it was kind of lame.
No.
Because his joke was that he banged some chick at every wedding before, and all of them were there. It just was kind of like, these people don't exist. I really felt like none of these people exist.
The guests were good. I still like the play between Schmidt and... What's the other dude?
Nick.
Jake.
I love
Nick.
I love Nick.
Schnick.
Nick is one of my favorite characters, and I've seen him in other little movies, and I think he's – I like that actor. I think he's the best part of the show.
The play between them about, like, doing a foursome.
Yeah.
And, like, him not wanting to, except for realizing what else he would have to deal with if he didn't go through with that. I thought it was really funny. It was a good dynamic there.
Nick is one of my favorite things about this show, when he gets gripey and has to do something.
I liked Winston's logic, too. So you think, if Schmidt and I were to have sex with two other girls at the same time, do you think that would get weird?
The salt and pepper.
And he knocks over the salt and pepper.
Yes, there's pepper everywhere.
Wow, look at that. I got salt and pepper mixed. Oh, look at that. I got pepper in the salt hole. How weird is that?
See, that's what I'm saying. This show's still funny, and that's what this episode reminded me of, because it hasn't been funny for me for a long time.
It is. I still laughed at quite a bit of it. I felt like it kind of revealed a few sore spots where they still have work to do.
And they do.
To their credit, they recognize a lot of their downfallings in the previous season, and they said they were going to try and address them. I don't feel that they did that fully with this episode, but then again, this is kind of within that goofier wheelhouse that the previous season was doing. I think that they play to their strengths when they play with realistic elements mixed in a little bit more than just this wacky, oh, they're all at a wedding, they're all at Prince's party, they're all whatever.
You're not wrong about that. The thing is, I didn't think this was a great episode of the show. Like, it's not at its height, but I also thought it was a notable improvement from where they ended last year.
Yeah, they just need to play real American in every episode, and that's all I
agree.
See.
If we could just see that, that'd be great.
Well, the episode ended with them saying, fuck this, and scraping all the wedding invitations off of the refrigerator.
That was good.
Including, one of them was for Cece's wedding.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, is this a symbol that they're
you
saying,
think it's a
fuck
meta comment?
This, and we're going to move forward
it
with
may
this
have been.
Story? Because that's what I was really hoping.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Because, you know, there's that kind of, if you don't get married by a certain age, that Woody Harrelson thing.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, okay, we're not going to worry about that. I don't know. They're just, I really hope that was a symbol that they were like,
and it may
okay,
have
we're
been.
Done. We got to move forward with this show.
And even then, just them all interacting and being friends in the house like that,
at the
I
end?
Thought that felt a lot more like what I love about the show than the silly shtick in the wedding.
I agree.
Let's take this group and put them somewhere. Is like, that's not right. It
you're
doesn't
right.
Work
that,
when
that
they
scene
do
at
that.
The end was some of the strongest stuff in the show, I thought. So, I mean, like I say, overall, I thought this was nowhere near as good as it has been as peak, but nowhere near as bad as I was afraid it was going to be, and that I'd have to quit it.
Well, let's go ahead and jump over to the Mindy Project.
I love the Mindy Project.
Me too.
And I got to tell you, I love that it's called the Mindy Project, because this is a show that has rewritten itself within the same parameter. You know, like, they're very clearly like, this girl didn't work, so we fired her and got a new girl in. You know, like,
well, I think they're constantly having to change and evolve Mindy, which makes the name very appropriate.
Yeah.
Because she's got problems.
She's got a lot of problems and a lot of expectations.
Mindy Kaling is brilliant.
She's really, I'm very fond of the show.
It's clearly her voice throughout the show, too. Like, all the writing and the dialogue, you can tell that she has a hand in everything.
Well, her mother was an OBGYN.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so that's,
okay.
There's that, you know, so she was able to take that on there. It's her show. She's the main writer. She and Ike Barinholtz are the main writers.
He's killer
on the show.
He is. I really love, oh man, I always forget the actor's name. The guy from Happy Endings that was added
Adam
on to the show.
Adam Pally.
Yeah. He is such a great addition.
He is, and I had not seen the show with him previously.
Neither
have I liked his take here. He's a different character than he was on Happy Endings, but still in the same wheelhouse.
Does he kind of play like a douchebag?
No.
Like a real severe douchebag in Happy Endings?
Yeah, he was kind of like a... he's kind of like your douchey friend.
I didn't get a douchebag vibe. I thought he was sort of an innocent. Like, I thought he was...
No, not
on Happy Endings.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about Happy
Endings.
On the Mindy Project? Have you not been watching it before this episode?
No, I haven't. I watched the first two of season one. I'm way behind on this.
Oh, no, he's been a douchebag.
Okay, because in this one he came off as like the poor Duke.
Yeah, he was the guy who finally said, I've been a douchebag because I'm an actor.
Oh, so that was a change.
He kind of came clean. Never satisfied a woman.
For you guys, this was a like coming home kind of deal. This was like you'd been watching and enjoying.
Yeah.
For me, this was a chance to check into it, And I wonder how much of it I didn't get because I hadn't seen all the character growth. So I was this was like a new look at all these characters.
There was a lot of character growth.
Okay.
The whole Danny Castellano, her boyfriend.
And I hadn't seen that since first episode. Yeah.
Because they went back and forth, you know. Before.
It was definitely a will they, won't they, of course.
When they did, it was like, I can't go out with you.
Yeah, initially it was a big mess.
It was a big mess. And it's funny how much... crossover from Sunny in Philadelphia. There's been
they love the people like having Mac on there.
Yeah. Oh, that was great.
And his tattoo on his neck, Richard Lewis. Oh man.
And him playing the sort of dimbulb who like gives away several things because he's too stupid to know when he's not supposed to be talking. That was fun.
Well, and he was perfect as Ike Barinholtz's.
Yeah.
Were they cousins?
He said,
"So then I confessed, and I ratted you out so that we'd do time together."
Yeah.
And he's like, first he's all mad and. And he goes, and now we're closer, right? He goes, you're right, it worked.
Yeah, that guy is one of my favorite. I liked him from the very, very start, so I was glad to see he's still on the show.
Yeah, he's great.
Mindy loves Danny Castellano.
Oh,
yeah.
Loves the actor and just does so much with the guy.
Chris Messina.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Chris Messina.
Chris Messina's great.
I mean, the dance that he does at the end. I was dying.
She reached for her glasses and put her glasses on. It's so cool to see a woman do physical comedy that's believable like that.
Yeah.
Like for her to, you know.
Well,
I really dig her because she's like, no, I want sex. You know, she doesn't have.
I don't have the idealized figure.
Right.
I'm not always confident, but I'm confident and cute enough that it's believable. Well, I'm desirable.
That's one of the things I was going to say.
Great.
That's one of the things I say about watching this is that I very much it's got a feminine energy that nothing else on TV has. Like New Girl doesn't have this energy either.
Not at all.
It has a lot of the stuff. The guy doing the dance at the end, the stripper dance for his girlfriend, is such a gender flip of the thing we've seen hundreds of times before, the girlfriend dressing up for the guy. We've seen that in every sitcom.
And if it's a guy dancing, usually he sucks and he's awkward.
Yeah. You've never this
Here
is something
like
you don't
really
see.
Really good. It was like Magic Mike.
Yeah. And it was just so funny that she finds the thong in his drawer.
Yeah.
And it says dynamite.
banana hammock.
Adam Pally goes, well, it's a stripper thong. She's like, oh my God, he's a stripper in the house. And he's like, that's a dude's thong. Why? Because of the pouch? And he's like, it just never occurred to her that a man would have a thong. You know?
Saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah, of course. It's just dynamite on it, you know?
Diamond.
Oh, diamond, yeah. Either way.
Diamond Dan. Overall, I loved this episode.
I'm
so
a
glad
big
it's
fan
back.
Of the show, and I just think it's a show that has reinvented itself along the way several times.
It's gotten better and better.
It's gotten better and better.
It does the same thing like Parks and Rec and The Office did. They started off a little rough. They didn't know where their characters' voices were, and they just had to like kind of play with how each one would interact. And once they got that, now they know. And every episode, I'm just like, you guys are doing such a great job.
And you know what they have in common is that they're a writer comedy driven. The writer performer. You know, there's no voice in the New Girl show anymore, to me anymore. There's not even a central character on the show anymore.
Yeah. So I didn't love this as much as you guys, obviously, because I didn't come into it with that, but I liked it a lot. Where would you go back to? Like, where does it start to turn?
Two seasons ago?
I liked it from the beginning.
Yeah. Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it had some clunkers and some groaners, but
I quit for a season.
I just liked her so much from
the
beginning.
I'd say start the second season.
Yeah, because the first season totally turned me off.
I liked the first season. It had Bill Hader in it. And
I didn't think the jokes were hit. I thought there were a couple times with her jokes that they were just cruel.
Well,
it has nothing to do with who she is. It's just a joke. Like did one particular joke that just totally turned me off. I'm like this, and it's not. I just didn't think it was funny. It was totally cruel. It was attacking the woman from Precious. It was I just thought the joke was terrible.
Deborah Sidibe or whatever.
Yeah. But just the way she said it, and just in such a glib way, I'm like, this shit isn't funny.
I mean,
but I'm not. But that, but I, but I, that was it, and I haven't gone back.
And
to
it was
it,
the,
so.
It was the first season. I still think what would work best for you, the audience, is maybe watch a couple episodes from the first season to kind of get a bearing on who the characters are supposed to be. I mean, they're only 30-20 minute episodes.
Yeah.
And then jump into the second season where they actually kind of know what they're doing and they start growing and developing the characters.
Could you, you have any particular first season episodes that you think are standouts or?
No.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, it's one of those things where I feel like it's been good all along,
yeah.
But it's gotten a whole lot better than it was.
Okay. 'Cause
to me, I just like her. I liked her on The Office, you know, and she
like
was
her.
Much more of a writer on The Office. Yeah. She was very low on the call sheet,
that's
as
true.
They say.
Yeah.
But she was still a big presence.
Yeah.
And she plays that not ditzy is a little bit implies
no, but it's
dumb.
In that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, because she's not so much dumb.
It's more
she's
myopic.
Superficial.
She's myopic.
No,
she's
myopic is a good way of putting
it. She's
myopic.
Yeah. You know, which is for me, because, I mean, she's okay. I never thought of her as Mindy as a writer. I just thought she's okay. She's just not my cup of tea. So if she's myopic and her character's it's something she created. If I'm not vested in it, I'm like, I don't care. But I don't think she stinks. It's just me. I'm
not
into it.
Her character on The Office was dumb. Like she wrote her as dumb.
Mm-hmm.
She was supposed to be kind of dumb. And this is a version of that character if she were smart. That's how I see the Mindy. I mean, it feels more like Mindy Kaling herself, where she's maybe a little pop culture obsessed occasionally, but she's really smart underneath that.
Well, she wants the big happy ending.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the thing that she's held out for since the beginning of the show.
And she does well, like season finales, just culminating to those.
Yeah.
I mean, it's girly watching
it's
the
very
show.
Very girly.
Yeah.
Like, I just kind of want to wear my pajamas, get under a warm blanket, and eat popcorn and watch the show.
But I
don't care. It's such a good show.
Pour yourself a Cosmo.
I swear to God, I almost started having a period during one of
Oh. It's terrible.
That's why they call me Plug.
We're gonna go call a doctor real quick, and we'll be back.
I have to tie a sweater around my waist.
Oh, God. So, this is the end of times, guys. TV is dying.
That's what I hear.
The bubble is going to pop soon. It's any day now. The end is nigh.
Yeah, because it's like real estate.
No enthusiasm. No one even cares.
It's like real estate or, you know, the dust bowl.
The market. Oh, we're going down. It's another crash.
It's just like Y2K.
It is just... Okay, wait a second. I see what you're doing there. Okay, we're talking about the popping of the TV bubble.
I've been stockpiling VCR tapes. just for this day.
Good, because you might need them. No, you won't. But Variety put up an article last week talking about an oversaturation point. They had some studies that they did. And this was the kind of the shocking reveal of this, is that since 1999, we've had a 1,000% increase in programming, in television original programming on pay and network. That's not even including like Netflix or or Amazon Prime or any of those other little side online web things like Hulu, I guess. So TV's kind of exploding, and we've noticed this ourselves.
Yep.
We've been constantly complaining about like
too much good TV.
There's so much good TV. There's so much TV. Period. There's just not enough time to watch all of it.
It's at the programs. New programs. It said
original programs, not just new.
Right. Just the original programs.
The number of scripted series produced for just pay and basic cable.
Yeah.
1,000% increase. Can I tell you what those numbers mean to me?
Yeah, it means nothing.
Well, here's what it means. We've been hearing about the decreasing numbers for TV, like that ratings are nowhere near where they used to be. And you know why? Because the same number of people are watching a whole bunch of different shows.
There's a ton of stuff right now.
It's fragmented audience. It's niche programming. And, of course, the programmers and executives are nervous about that because it's mean less money in their pocket. But for viewers, it's a golden age because it means we can choose to watch what we want to watch.
It depends, though, because with that growth – which I always hate percentages because I could, because if I say from 1 to 10, that's 1,000%.
Right.
You know, it's just ridiculous.
I know, right?
But 1,000%
increase means, but oh, I sold 2,000.
Well, wait a minute. They give some numbers here.
Okay.
But finish your thought.
No. But then, so if, because if they got more new, they got no more new programming, and how many new channels, not include just basic cable channels that maybe have switched over to doing more original programs.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at like AMC, A&E,
FX too.
FX, FXX now. I mean, all these
FXX.
Well, FXX.
You don't want to watch TNT. XXX.
TNT. Oh, you're right.
With your parents.
TNT wasn't doing stuff. USA wasn't doing original programming for
145 scripted original primetime series and miniseries for just 2013, which is a 14% increase over the same... Oh, that's for 2014.
Yeah.
So it's already went up another 14% over last year.
And they say that for next year, for the 2014-15 cycle, at least 350 new and returning scripted shows, not including digital outlets like Netflix
and Amazon.
Of course,
that also, I think, includes shows that are pilot pitches.
Yeah, it does.
We can't sustain that kind of growth.
But
what about a margin call? We need a margin call.
It is, though.
What about the Germans?
It's kind of
ridiculous. What if the Germans come in and buy all of our TV shows?
Well, we
can't do this.
Hey, did we stop when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
No. And we're not going to stop now.
What the hell are we supposed to do, you moron?
All right, so FX Network's chief, John Landgraf, who, by the way, I think is probably the smartest executive in all of TV.
He's an insider. He's an inside trader.
But he sees it as a symptom of audience fragmentation that's been fact of life for programs for decades.
Yes.
He noted the number of scripted series on broadcast TV is actually down about 15% from its peak in the early 2000s.
You mean Utopia? They're really winging it on that show? Because it's gold, baby.
And he says lower cost, unscripted shows are making up the difference. And he sees similar scenario on the horizon for pay and basic cable. And he's just saying, when does the fragmentation become so great the ability to sustain and nurture these programs from a financial perspective becomes compromised? That's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Fragmentation.
Well, that would be the bubble popping.
Yeah.
They can't keep sustaining this amount of content.
I heard that Honey Boo Boo's parents split up. I really heard that today. So is that a symbol? Is that a signal of that?
Yes, that is.
Good Lord.
Wow. I think they were drinking milk at the time.
So. Yep, and then Batman came in.
I'm just saying, TV can't sustain, man.
I don't know.
I can't take it.
I think it's a good problem to have.
Exactly.
I mean, it's interesting because I always look at, you know, whatever media outlet there is, whether it's music, books, or publishing, news outlets, television, movies, there's always the one, I mean, essentially, there's always the entrenched interest that have been making a shitload of money off of this for a very long time, that they're the ones ringing the bell. It's over, even though I'm selling my house in Malibu, but it's over. And to me, as a wannabe content creator, it's like, it's good. It means I have a better chance if I can find
exactly
100 people that like the shit that I do, and I can get them to pay for me for my art. It's good for me, and I'm happy for that.
I agree. So that's absolutely a power shift.
Yeah,
that a lot more people are able to reach an audience that never had the ability because it was just the big networks and HBO that like owned everything.
Right.
But on the other hand, it seems like it's going in two different directions. It's it's this idea that big money is going to kind of win out because those people can pay the most and then market.
Guess what?
And grab that audience.
We're in a capitalistic society. The United States is based on big money winning out almost all the time. So get over that. I mean,
sure.
What about PBS?
But
big money, big government money.
But what this is doing is, and according to this article, is that it's spreading out the cost among all these people. Yeah. Like suddenly there's a scarcity of being able to get talent, being able to get crews to work on these shows because there's so many of them. Paying for the talent, just paying for all of the different costs.
But the thing is, though,
and so like, even paying for showrunners. Showrunners have become a much bigger thing, and now they have to pay like an extra couple, I think like $15,000 per episode.
But what you have to do, though, is that it's kind of like you have your tentpole stuff, like the movie industry, what should be movie industry. Mm-hmm. You have to take chances because there's more than enough people that want to do those jobs.
Right.
So you had to take chances. I mean, Vince Gilligan just didn't create Breaking Bad. He's been in the business for 20 years before, or like about 20 years before that. He started on X-Files, right?
Correct.
So the thing is that everybody wants to make money now because there's not that much money. So they don't want to invest in the talent to do it now. So that's, they pay for all the hot stuff now because they can get instant return. That's what everybody wants instead of just investing. Same thing with bands, same thing with news stories, same thing with anything. You have to invest money. Nobody wants to invest the money because there's not a lot of money there because the advertising dollars are down. That's where TV and most media get the funding for doing it, and that all that money is gone.
Well, I thought I read a pretty good example that AMC, they pointed out with AMC, and that is that AMC invested in two shows, Low Winter Sun and The Killing, which they both they had to end up canceling both of those shows, and the amount of money they had invested in those was like they like people didn't expect they put this much in, $52 million.
They bet wrong.
They did. They did bet wrong.
And here's the other thing.
But that's like 10 hours, right? I mean, 10 episodes, 10 hours, $52 million for a movie. $52 million is
nothing.
It's not a movie.
But here's the thing.
Low Winter Sun. That's a bet. That's a bad bet. It was a bet on an anti-hero show with Mark Strong. I would have made that bet.
That came from BBC.
That's fair. Well, not in retrospect. I wouldn't have either. But at the time,
I would have made
maybe.
That's why I watched
Mark Strong is good. An anti-hero show seems hot.
And it was the same show from the BBC that was good over there.
But The Killing was a – I mean, they're not talking about The Resurrection. They're talking about the original Killing, not like when they brought it back. Because they chose to bring it back.
Yeah.
That's like the guy who keeps getting like 17 and getting busted out, and the dealer keeps beating him on blackjack going, all right, hit me one more time. That's what that was. They took another bath on that because they kept investing in that show. That's a bad example. Except I guess they are talking about it says the latter was resurrected for a final season run, but that's not what they're talking about. But
no, that was by Netflix.
Yeah, you know what I would rather – I would find a more interesting thing would be like Hell on Wheels. Who watches Hell on Wheels?
Yeah.
You know? And how much does that cost to make? I mean, it's a Western.
Yeah.
So it's going to have a...
I imagine there's some cost.
There's some cost. Probably not as much as...
props
know,
and well, action
Star Wars
scenes
or something.
And,
but I mean, still. But who watches that show? I don't know a single person that watches that show.
And the
show.
Thing is that they don't talk about here, which is interesting, is they don't talk about like people's personal little... They like something. Like, for instance, Rome and Deadwood... expensive shows on HBO that were actually really fucking good.
Yeah.
Cut for budget.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who was running HBO back then. I think it was a little bit different than they are now. Now you look at some of the shows they're doing now, got to be at least as expensive as those shows now as they were. I mean, Boardwalk Empire is not a cheap show.
Well, that's one of the reasons Boardwalk Empire is getting cut in early.
Yeah.
And that's a symptom of this is that the worry is, and I think this is a reasonable worry, is that not so much that TV is going to stop being produced, but if it's becoming too expensive to take a chance on shows, we get more safe shows. We get less – somebody taking a chance on something like a Breaking Bad is going to become less likely if it's easier to do another CSI.
Well, I think we're already kind of seeing that.
At the networks we are.
Pay attention to the news that we've been saying, and you guys will notice that we're talking about remakes of movies and reboots of TV shows all the time.
But those are always on network. I mean, you don't
– not always.
Well, a lot of them are on network. But like the premium high – I mean, what is probably the top three artistic – channels, network or cable? You got HBO. I'd probably put FX there.
Sure.
It may be AMC only because they still had Mad Men.
Fargo, Leftovers, Walking Dead. All three of those networks.
So those three networks.
Mm-hmm.
And other than AMC, which is kind of, they kind of fell into it. So to me, the problem that they're having is stemmed from they fell into Mad Men and Breaking Bad and didn't own their show. And they had to say, oh, shit, we should own our show. So they're still relatively a new network trying to get that shit together with
Because Landgraf talks about that on here. John Landgraf on FX talks about this a lot. He says that they've started saying X Productions where they're owning more of their content. And that's because, like I said, Grouch, these guys, are going to be on their own content. But the network's been doing this for years. They've already been running this direction. That's why some shows that are low rated get canceled, and some shows that are low rated get picked up. It's because Sony owns Community.
Right.
So NBC doesn't pick that up. So NBC doesn't pick that up. They pick up something that they produce, like Parks and Rec. So you're seeing a lot more stuff where there's a lot more, the company owns whatever it's making. But what that means is that smaller independent production companies are going to have a harder time, even with this much room for scripted TV, people are not going to want to buy from other content providers. They want to own everything, so they make all the money on digital, all the money on DVDs, all the money on everything, so that they can make the profit on their hits, so that they can absorb the losses from their misses.
And also because they're not getting that commercial money.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I mean,
yeah, because yeah, the money is in the back end.
The
now.
Money, it's not in the upfront. It's not in digital advertising. It's not in any of that because there's no money in digital advertising.
But it
is still a good problem to have.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Look at all the
yes.
shows
yes.
that
yes.
are on Comedy Central now.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
low budget independent mm-hmm. programming that is groundbreaking.
Yep.
Look at the stuff that's on Sundance.
Yep,
Garfunkel yes, Notes and Drunk History.
Yep.
And even reinventing. You yep. know, we've talked about the comedy show that
Meltdown.
Yeah. I mean, they've reinvented just stand up comedy shows.
True. Those shows don't cost much. They don't bring that much money in. I mean, the money
they bring in
they
enough.
Must bring in enough.
I mean, that's
enough,
the thing.
Because like, you have a bunch of them. But like the big drama show. No, I mean serious. But like the big drama shows is what. Is well, the marquee on that, it.
That's what we're going to be losing, potentially.
But the thing is, yeah. I think we've already lost those. Other than something like even the Blacklist, which is a pretty big hit yeah. for NBC, is not doing the kind of numbers that, say, you know, Dallas or whatever did back in the day. And that's fragmentation of the audience. That's just the changing market.
But look at the shows that are the number one shows.
Yeah.
The CSI type shows.
Yes.
And the NCIS.
Yeah.
Those aren't the shows anybody that is cool watches anyway.
Those
are like grandparent shows.
No, you're
right?
not wrong.
Those are
yeah.
the shows that are always on at your parents' house.
Yeah. Well, here's my question, going back to the original mm-hmm. premise. Do we think is variety right? Is there a bubble pop about to come? Are we going to see a downturn in scripted programming?
No.
I mean, according to you, we're already seeing.
I don't think
what.
Weren't you just insinuating that we've already seen some of it?
What a downturn in scripted programming?
Yeah.
I don't know that I
thought that you were implying that.
No,
we're already seeing
quality of it.
What we're seeing is more people owning the shows they make.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not seeing. What we're not, I think the downturn, if anything, is small production houses. Everything's going to be bigger. Everything's going to be done by bigger companies, which means less independent voices.
I think
that's the most likely outcome.
About 5-7 years ago, we saw a big backlash against the big first wave boom of original programming when we saw all this reality TV that just started yeah. oversaturating every yeah. network channel.
Well, part of it was that's because it was getting ratings and it was so cheap to do.
Like, and there were suddenly so yeah. many channels to fill.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, that was a big part
well,
of that.
And also because just the TV machine... At the way they used to do TV shows, it was just it was like moving a battleship. So okay, we need to fill this up. Okay, well my script is like, say I'm Aaron Sorkin. Okay, yeah, well, I'm still developing this. I'll have it ready for next season. Oh, but we need some shit now. Okay, put on The Voice. Just I know it's not those shows, but something like that. That's why reality came in because back in the day, doing those shows are just. Moving those networks, you're like just moving battleships. It was too much. Now you've got, I mean, from a technological point of view, from a vision point of view, I mean, you got somebody like Louis, or you got somebody which I am thoroughly into the Nick, but you've got a guy, Steven Soderbergh, who knows how to get, who knows about production, doing tight production, knows how to get it done. 10 episodes, 72 days, bam, done. You know?
As much as you cut budgets, though, I do think, yeah, I agree, that there's going to be a bubble pop.
Yeah.
I think that there's too much competition out there that they can't sustain all these.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what is your definition of a bubble pop?
I think that they're going to have to cut back on a lot of their big budget type shows, but they're not going to be able to, because they're not going to be able to get the numbers back, the return on.
But there's two different things. I think scripted shows, whether they're good or not, are still going to go because you've got too many outlets for it. Good ones is a whole other country, is a whole other thing. Or ones that challenge, like you say, like challenging ones with independent voices. I think that might go.
So do you think, Grant, that the outcome is going to be more CSIs and that kind of thing that are easier hits, or do you think that?
I think we'll get will stay.
What do you consider big budget shows? Like, would you say the Nick is less likely to happen in our bleak TV future?
I think it's phenomenal that Hannibal is still sticking around. I would think something like that would definitely go.
Yeah, you're right. Now Hannibal, there's also this doesn't address that, but Hannibal has a weird, unique situation, and it's getting foreign funding and playing in foreign markets.
Yeah, it does.
And I wonder, they don't.
don't talk about. This is Variety. Variety is concerned with the U.S. media. They don't talk about the overseas market for shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are definitely shows that are being exported, and I wonder if that's a saving grace. You know, if stuff that's a little more. What the overseas market wants is maybe going to start dictating a little more what we get.
Of course, that's what they do with movies already, you know?
And if that, I mean, that's not something I particularly want to see because we've seen what happened to movies. Movies got really
dumbed
down.
I just think like the Friends dynasty is, that kind of model is completely dead.
Oh, we'll never see that again. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No one's going to be making
$20 an episode.
Big Bang Theory is like probably the last one.
That's the Big Bang Theory. Big Bang Theory is the dinosaur. It's the last one that we'll see. Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I don't think, but I'm not sure that's necessarily bad. It's bad if you're a TV actor, but if you're a TV viewer, who cares?
Yeah, it's true, but I don't know. I'm interested to see if
I guess
things keep growing, we get more of this stuff. I mean, we already complain about fatigue.
Yeah.
So, and we're TV fanatics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The average person, you can't keep up with conversation about this. And what does that mean for a market then?
You said there's 145 scripted shows out right now.
Yeah.
I watch what, 8, 9, 10 of them maybe? I mean, I've got how many shows?
And we happen to watch the same ones right now.
Well,
I've got 50 shows on my DVR.
I have 50 shows on my DVR, but not every week.
No.
I don't get 50 shows a week. That's just how many I'm set to record at any time.
Yeah.
But they're not on. They overlap. They break down, you know, through the season.
But I'm saying total, we're watching less than half. And that's fine. We don't feel like we're missing anything. We're watching what we want to watch. I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing or so much a problem for viewers.
No.
Like, we talk about fatigue. Like, there's too much good TV. But there's always binge watching when it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
At no point do I ever seriously like, ugh, I quit TV. There's too much good stuff to watch. That's never going to be the problem I'm going to have.
No. And I don't think that'd be an
issue. And there's always, because, you know, kind of bridging other conversations we have about, you know, cutting the cord, there's always going to be need for filling up for content. Because if HBO does go off on its own, then Showtime might try, or another, maybe a startup. I'd love to see it like a real startup, like YouTube type of channel, but like starts that's you can get subscribed to through the internet. Like, I don't know, like an HBO, like if HBO started now instead of like the late 70s, like somebody who could do that, do scripted shows. Or have somebody like say
Amazon
if
it, Prime,
yeah. Or like no, I'm talking about like, say if like Kevin or like Katzenberg, DreamWorks. Say if DreamWorks said we want to do our own TV show. Is DreamWorks still around, or am I?
Yeah, they're totally, still around.
Okay,
yeah.
But if those three guys who are very rich guys said I want to do my own TV show, my own TV channel, could I have all this content? And they just said okay, but it was only going to be it's good. You can subscribe to it online. And I'm not going to do it anywhere else. That something like that could if somebody wants to do that, if people really believe that's the way to go, then they're going to need content from that, and there's going to be a ton of people that are going to try to make stuff.
That's the point I was going to make is that a few years back, the heartbreak of TV for me was the show I really like got canceled. Nowadays, the heartbreak is I really want to watch that show, but I don't have time for it. I'm good with that as a switch. I mean, right now there's so many outlets that if a show you like gets canceled, there's pretty good odds it's going to show up on another network because they desperately need the content and it's a proven property.
And even though there's a ton, they're saying that there's a ton, there's too much, it's a bubble, it's about to blow. 2 weeks ago, I'm going, oh my God, would the summer end so I could watch a fucking new show?
You can't
see
me.
I'm so sick of all this bad television that's on right now.
You can't see me doing the nose point to Johnny. That is so on the
nose. Oh my God, there was nothing on for a month. It's like America's Got Talent is a huge show. You know why? Because there's nothing else on.
Yeah.
It's like summer is death on television.
Well, even look at like Yahoo, which...
Except for Sunday night on HBO cable, right?
Which is always good.
Or what? And even all Showtime. Year round. Even Showtime, you get sucked into like weird stuff like Ray Donovan, which is a crazy show. But like I look at Yahoo, which is like a weird old it's like a weird you don't ever think about Yahoo
but they're a content provider.
But they're content. They're putting out community.
Yahoo, PlayStation. Yeah, we have another new batch of
PlayStation's doing a TV. I didn't know this.
They're doing Powers.
But they're doing their own TV thing. I couldn't figure out why they were doing TV content. They're putting out a new device that's like the Apple TV and the Roku.
Ah.
That's specifically a TV and game streaming
thing. I thought Sony was like going bankrupt.
Apparently not so bankrupt they can't put out a new TV console.
Which I was like,
October.
You guys need money, Sony? Yeah. Sell Spider-Man back to Marvel. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Motherfuckers. All right, guys. Well, audience, let us know what you guys think about this bubble. Is it coming? Is this just a bunch of bollocks? Are you guys British? Do you not even care?
That went to a weird place.
Also, do remember to email us if you guys have any questions. Like us on Facebook and on Twitter. And go to iTunes and give us a little 5-star review. It helps out the show. Until next week, guys.
TV News out.